In her new book, The Airbnb Story, How Three Ordinary Guys Disrupted an Industry, Made Billions, and Created Plenty of Controversy, Fortune magazine editor Lee Gallagher tells the behind-the-scenes story of the creation and growth of the online lodging platform that has become, in under a decade, one of the largest providers of accommodations in the world. While neither owning nor controlling any of the inventory it offers, but instead inviting everyday people to profit their space and giving travelers a more unique and affordable way to see the world, whether that's a treehouse, a castle, or just a studio apartment in a residential part of town, Airbnb has had a radical and transformative impact on its customers, the travel industry, and even on the way that we view space. Again, the name of the book is The Airbnb Story, How Three Ordinary Guys Disrupted an Industry, Made Billions, and Created Plenty of Controversy. And it's a pleasure to welcome Lee Gallagher to the roundtable this morning. Lee, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Joe.
What brought you to this story and wanting to look at these three gentlemen and what they accomplished?
Well, you know, I just, so I'm an editor at Fortune magazine, and we observe businesses as they come and go all the time, especially out from Silicon Valley. These, you know, every year we hear about these ideas that are going to change the world, and some of them do, and some of them go by the wayside. But, you know, in Airbnb over the years, I basically just witnessed this incredibly disruptive social and cultural and business phenomenon, basically wrapped all in one. And what struck me was that it started as a fringe idea that no one thought would work. Everyone thought this was a crazy idea. People are going to get murdered. I want no part of this. And yet it has become this force that has just become a part of the zeitgeist, changed the way people travel, changed the way people make money. And it was all by these three guys that were kind of basically outsiders. I mean, they didn't really know much about starting and running a huge business like this.
You do get the impression in reading the book that they had no idea really what they were getting into.
No, they didn't. It's funny. I recently was speaking with the CEO, Brian Chesky, and he had said that, you know, he thought at the time that if it was going to be really, really successful, that maybe, just maybe, a few hundred people would use this service, and that they could just hope for that. And so they didn't have any idea. I mean, I say in the book that he was probably the biggest outsider of them all because he had no business experience whatsoever. And no technology experience whatsoever. So he didn't know, for example, what angel investors were. Somebody said, oh, you've got to go get an angel. You know, meet with these angels, have dinner with them. And he said, these people are crazy. They believe in angels. Didn't know what a slide deck was. Somebody told him, you have to put together a slide deck. And, you know, all of these things were that foreign to him. And so, of course, they learned over time. But I actually think that it takes that kind of outsider perspective to see something that was not really serving, you know, that there was a hole in the hospitality, conventional hospitality business. Sometimes it takes fresh eyes to identify those opportunities.
You write that Chesky originally thought that it felt very strongly about this, that it should be a free service.
Yeah, this was interesting. I mean, this also just goes to show you how little he thought about business. The other two were sort of like, no, we want to try to make money. But he really felt, he said he was very progressive and felt that this should be sort of like a movement and a community, almost like couch surfing, which did exist at the time as a free service for people to literally open up their sofas for other people to stay in. And he felt very strongly about that. And in the end, the other two convinced him that, no, this should be a business opportunity.
At what point in the timeline did they realize that they really were onto something and this was going to be more than 100 people?
It was probably by the end of 2009. They had the idea in 2007, spent a full year with very little success getting anyone to use this service. Then they got into an accelerator program out in Silicon Valley called Y Combinator, and there they learned some key lessons. As I say in the book, their mentor there who ran it, a guy named Paul Graham, told them right off the bat, you know, go to your users. You don't have many users, but go and shower them with love and make them really believe in your product. It was sort of this tenet that he had that was, it's better to have 100 people love you than a million people who sort of like you. Like, it's better to just really develop those passionate users. So they did that. They went to New York and they sat in the living rooms of people that were using their product and taught them how to really merchandise their homes a little bit better. And that's when the numbers really started to turn. It was even during those few weeks that they started to see a change in the business. And then later in the year, by the end of 2009, they had gotten enough traction that they knew they were onto something. And that's when they got their first investment check from a venture capital firm. So that's when it started to take off. But even then, I don't think they thought it was going to be, you know, now they've had 160 million trips that have been taken on their platform. I don't think they ever saw it being that big.
Airbnb certainly wasn't the first website to let people rent out their homes. What made it different?
It wasn't. In fact, that was a big reason why, as I write in the book, I really rolled my eyes the first time someone came into my office and said, oh, you've got to hear about this new company called Airbnb. I said, you know, I've used HomeAway.com, I've used VRBO.com for years, and these tech companies sometimes think they can take an old idea, gloss it up a little bit, and reissue it onto the marketplace. And, you know, I was wrong to dismiss them, but they did a few things that were different. Number one, two of the three founders came from the Rhode Island School of Design. So they had classic industrial design backgrounds, and they thought of this as a full kind of experience that they designed. You know, it wasn't just about offering a room to stay. It was about getting help from the host of where to go in the city. It was about designing the website in a very user-friendly way that really emphasized the personalities of both sides, the host and the traveler. And it was also, they really popularized the notion of sharing the space at the same time. So those other sites focused on renting out a whole house, typically a second home. They were also typically in vacation markets. They were typically in places like beach towns or mountain towns. And Airbnb from the very beginning was an almost entirely urban phenomenon, which made it very appealing to this new group of millennial travelers who loved to visit cities and who really were not yet claimed by the hospitality industry. So it was a number of things.
The final part of the subtitle is and created plenty of controversy. I want to talk a little bit about that. First off, let's talk about regulators. Why did they fight so hard against Airbnb?
Well, technically, in some markets, Airbnb is flat out illegal. New York City, for example, has had laws against short-term rentals ever since 2010. And that was designed for other kinds of bad actors who were offering illegal hotels. But Airbnb fell into that category, and they sort of came in and they operated anyway. And no one really cared when Airbnb was really small in 2009, but the bigger Airbnb got, the more of a nuisance it became to the hospitality industry, to the hotel union, to regulators, to affordable housing groups who started to claim that it was taking housing off the market. So, you know, it has faced these issues in a number of markets, and they've only gotten bigger the bigger Airbnb gets because it's having a bigger impact on all those stakeholder groups.
One of the other controversies, and you write about this, that you say in the book that they spent a long time refining, look at some of the risks that were to be encountered and looking at a way of minimizing those risks. And you say that the one thing that they were perhaps the least prepared for was racial discrimination, the bad behavior amongst those who had the properties and were going to rent them for short term. When did this start to develop and turn into a real problem? And how has the company, in some cases, both successfully and unsuccessfully, dealt with it?
Yeah, so this is something that did take the company by surprise. And they had other controversies that took them by surprise. They were not prepared when the first ransacking happened on the platform. They learned a lot from that. And this started to happen. It's funny. So there was a Harvard study that came out last year that demonstrated that there was discriminatory behavior happening. There was actually a previous study the year before that at the time Airbnb dismissed. They said, well, this study has flaws. This was only one market. They sort of poo-pooed it. And when the second one came out, it was followed by a story on NPR and by people who had come out and really said, hey, this happened to me. And suddenly, it became a huge issue overnight. I mean, everyone was talking about this around water coolers. This became front and center. And they were caught off guard for it. They have acknowledged that. They were very forthright in saying, we missed this. They and others have suggested that one of the reasons they maybe missed it was because the company was founded by three white guys who never really didn't bring that perspective to creating this platform and didn't think that this would happen. And so, but it did, because it's a public platform, and bad behavior that exists in society is going to reflect itself on the platform. In Airbnb's case, it was really a crisis to the core, because their whole kind of quote-unquote mission statement is that anyone can belong anywhere. They really believe that they bring the world together, and this is the exact opposite of that. So they were very contrite about it, and they doubled down and did all these studies and did a 90-day review and came out with all of these solutions, what they saw as solutions to fix things, among other things, requiring that every user check a box and sign a user pledge that says, I will not discriminate. So, you know, can you really do that? This is a public platform, but that, you know, these were the tools that they used. And, you know, the issue has died down. I don't think it's going to go permanently away ever, because this is just the nature of what you deal with when you don't control the people offering your product.
And, I mean, obviously this is something that Twitter deals with. It's something that Facebook deals with. It's something that Craigslist deals with. All of these platforms have basically the same problem, which is to control the bad behavior of those who use it.
Exactly. And you know, sometimes it works to their favor, because they can say, well, we're just a platform. We're not a content company, or we're not a media company, these tech companies. Or in this case, we're not a hotel company. You know, we are just allowing for the exchange of information and services by people, by two different parties. So that lets them shield themselves from liability with damages, or if somebody gets hurt. But, you know, at a certain point, it is a brand, and it is something that people trust, and there's a lot of question over how much it is an independent platform and how much it really is something that really people are using because it is Airbnb. So it's complicated, but it's part of this brave new world that we're living in, where these tech companies emerge out of nowhere as platforms. I mean, Uber is similar. You know, TaskRabbit is similar. These are, you know, what is the liability and responsibility of the company, and what lies on the users? It's very different from the way things used to work.
You write about this in the book. You just mentioned that Airbnb is not a hotel company, and yet they have had an impact on the hotel industry. How have the two gotten along?
Oh my gosh, it's such a complicated story. I spent a whole chapter in the book on this for that reason, and I was really intrigued by this, because it's funny. Over time, initially the hotel companies were dismissive. They were very late to recognize Airbnb as a threat. I have an anecdote in the book of a CFO of a major hotel chain who said, as recently as 2013, somebody said, "What do you think about Airbnb?" And he said, "What's Airbnb?" And, you know, that has kind of evolved over time. They obviously now recognize it, but for a long time, both they and Airbnb were very careful to say that, no, everything's fine, we can coexist. The hotel industry said, we don't see them as a threat. We had a record year last year, which is true. Airbnb says, for us to win, no one has to lose, everyone can get along. But that's increasingly very, very difficult to make that case, because, you know, the data is starting to show that there is a tangible impact. One of the big ways the hotel industry makes a lot of its profits is through something called compression pricing, which is when a major event comes to town, prices spike because the supply is limited. Well, now Airbnb basically absorbs all that extra demand, and so that's having a real impact in hotels' ability to charge those prices. I quote the CEO of Best Western as saying, you know, next time you're on stage at a conference, ask the audience how many people are staying in an Airbnb, and just see how many hands go up, and how can the hotel industry say it's not having an impact? So I think there's more acknowledgement on both sides, but there's also more animosity on both sides.
Which brings us to the final question, and one that you wrestle with in the book, and that is, what does the future hold for this company?
Well, it's interesting. For a long time, you know, the world now knows Airbnb as a place to go for accommodations, for to have a whimsical, interesting, unique, authentic way to travel, depending on who you believe there. But increasingly, and it does do that. I mean, one of its biggest disruptions was letting people stay in neighborhoods that are really off limits to tourists. So you can have a really, you know, charming, more interesting experience. And that is interesting. A lot of people like that. Well, now Airbnb is trying to take its whole company in a different direction and offer other things. So last fall, they announced they're launching a platform for experiences. So Now, when you book your Airbnb in, let's say, Miami, you can also arrange to book a tour of fire spinners underground in the nightlife, you know, some arcane world that you would not have access to, led by a local. And so people can offer these tours and you can book them. That's just one part of where Airbnb sees itself going. I mean, the company really sees itself as an online travel company that it hopes will be the first to reach $100 billion in market value. And it has big, bold plans for things like restaurant reservations, ground transportation, offering grocery and cooking services, and something around flights. So, you know, Brian Chesky in the book tells me that he thinks that one day the revenue from just accommodations will be less than half of the revenue of the whole company. So that's a very different company, and it'll be really interesting to see how it gets there and if it gets there.
The name of the book is The Airbnb Story, How Three Ordinary Guys Disrupted an Industry, Made Billions, and Created Plenty of Controversy. Lee Gallagher is the author and the editor at Fortune Magazine. Lee, thank you very much for being with us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks to you, Joe. Take care.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is The Airbnb Story. It is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.